welcome to another episode of We the People Radio. Today is December 22nd, 2024. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And my name is Bill Cundiff.
Hello, Willis.
What's happening today?
Well, today I can't make Skype work for whatever reason. Of course, worked last night. It worked at midnight, but
sure.
it doesn't work now.
It's kind of like my Christmas lights. I get them all hooked up. They work great. I shut them off and the timer goes off and half of them don't work. It's just the way it is.
Ill and the magical Christmas light problems.
Yeah.
Oh, there. I think he's on there. Okay, so my question is answered that I can't get on Skype because I can't make Skype work, but I'll fix it. We're going to talk about American foreign policy under the Trump administration with Ambassador Francis Rooney. He is an American politician and diplomat who was the U.S. representative for Florida's 119th congressional district from 2017 to 2021 in the Republican caucus. He served as the United States ambassador to the Holy See under George W. Bush from 2005 to 2008 and is the chairman of Rooney Holdings. He has a terrific book. It's called The Global Vatican. We have it linked on the page for today. And I see that my Twitter link didn't go up, but I will hook that on there too because he has that. So you can chatterbox with him. But he has, I'm sure, family and stuff because it's Christmas time. So we are on a limited schedule with him this morning, afternoon, I guess. So he was going to talk to us about his, I don't know, is this prognostication or just thoughts on where Trump's foreign policy will go this time? I wasn't sure. Ambassador Rooney, are you in there?
Yes, thank you for having me on.
Hey. Well,
I think there's a lot to talk about.
I know.
About what's going on in the world right now, and the presence of Trump changes a few games.
Yeah, and so we were curious because you had a kind of a good bird's eye view on that. What are you thinking?
Well, I think the fact that Trump won was going to have an impact on both China and Russia anyway. And improve the prospects for solving something with the Ukraine. And I still believe that's the case. But now, what an amazing event happened last week with these Sunni radicals kicking Assad out of Syria. That has upended both Russia and Iran. It makes them look like the big losers and has empowered Turkey to step in the power vacuum. And we're much closer to Turkey, even though it's sometimes rocky, than we are, obviously, to Russia or Iran.
Yeah. From the outside looking in, it looks like that's a good thing, that this will help. Is that?
Oh, I think it's a great thing.
Okay. All right.
I mean, first of all, Bashar Assad was one of the most atrocious, heinous, authoritarian killers in the entire world. I mean, he makes Maduro look like Mother Teresa. And so he's gone, and now I don't know what's going to happen, whether it'll descend into chaos or whatever. I think it's in our interest to get Turkey to exert stability in that area. They border Syria to the north, and they have interest there. But the great thing is, the pipeline from Iran to Syria to Hezbollah has just been destroyed. And I worked on the 2007 war problems, and Iran was supplying a lot of weapons and backup ammunition and things via Syria through tunnels into Lebanon for Hezbollah, and now that's all done.
And this pretty much takes Russia out of the game over there, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think it does. I think the new players there are Israel and Turkey.
Yeah.
Nice.
And Israel, by the way, so smart. They right away just blew up everything along the coast.
Well, talk about that a little bit.
Well, they seized a preemptive strike in the vacuum after the fall of Assad, which is a good thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
Up in the air right now is what's going to happen to Latakia, the Russian port on the Eastern Med in Lebanon.
Now, are they still occupying that?
I think so.
Mm.
But they're cut off. They can't resupply it or anything. I mean, it's
right.
Going to get difficult for them. But this is a huge setback for Russia and Iran in the Middle East. No doubt about that.
I'm curious how, I don't know if this is a something that we can know, but how long do you think it'll take them to figure out the Ukraine thing once Trump really hits the ground?
I don't think it'll take too long. I think Trump will approach Putin about a deal. They'll probably meet. The deal will probably be cut that involves Russia keeping Crimea, maybe giving the Ukraine back some of Donbass, and some commitments about what will not happen with the Ukraine and NATO.
Yeah, where do you think that's headed?
Well, I think that most people would not support allowing the Ukraine into NATO right now. We're just asking for another conflict. In fact, I think a lot of people are questioning the expansion of NATO anyway, but certainly in the context. I mean, I'm all for the expansion of NATO in most of the countries that they've done it, but some of them, you got to wonder, you know, are they really strategic enough for us to go fight? And the Ukraine's on the edge.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What about the other guys in NATO? Where do you think they are with it? Are they just looking to us, or who's the next big player?
One possibility is that a group of European nations, probably led by Macron, would put troops in the Ukraine in a post-peace settlement environment to help preserve stability there. And that's good, because that means it doesn't invoke NATO and defense commitments and all that. I think that would be a good outcome for us if they can orchestrate it.
Yeah. Where do you think Zelensky's position is going to be on this? Because he has been pretty adamant about giving up any territory, and I think that's going to be necessary to strike a peace deal, won't it?
He's going to be adamant until he isn't.
Right.
I mean, he's kind of a paper tiger. I mean, Zelensky doesn't exist without Western Europe and the United States.
Oh yeah.
And he can't, even with Western Europe and the United States, the superior population and industrial plant of Russia is grinding him down. He did well for a while, but gradually, you know, the war of attrition has set in. And in a war of attrition, like the Civil War and so many other wars, the country with the most industrial plant and people is going to win.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and he is definitely getting ground down. And you're right. Without all the foreign support, he's doomed.
Yeah, I mean, he should just keep his mouth shut.
What about all the rebuilding? Who's picking up the tag for that?
I hope it's not us.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering.
But, you know, our legislators seem to love to spend our money.
Yeah.
Look at what happened this week. They can't resist spending our money.
Yeah.
I mean, I voted against every portion of every farm bill when I was in Congress. The Agriculture Department was set up, and these programs were set up at a time when like 80% of the country were individual farmers. Now, who's all this money go to now? Archer Daniels Midland, Cargill, these huge conglomerates.
Yeah, but 80% of it's food stamps. It's not even farm.
Well, that part, yeah, and that's ridiculous, too.
20% of it's farm.
15 million people when George Bush left office. Now, what's it, like 50 or 60 million people?
Oh, it's bad. The other part of it, too, is that without the ability, I mean, you look at what the agencies, we're in an area that has a lot of farming and ranching here, and so many of these people, they wouldn't be able to keep their land without a lot of those programs, because the government's constantly shutting off their water and shutting off their ability to grow. So, you know, it's kind of a weird catch-22. That comes first, and then all of a sudden, we can't let all our, you know, farmers go broke. I guess the country, we get our food from China, Mexico.
Well, yeah, in a perfect world, I would say, you know, we have the dams, the infrastructure for the water. Give the farmers the water, but don't give them the free money.
Yeah, but we don't get to have the water. One of the third largest reclamation project in the country that was built around the turn of the century is up in Klamath Falls, Oregon. Spills down into Northern California, and they just took out all the dams there. they took them out for no reason.
We saw the low levels at Glen Canyon and Lake Havasu and all that last summer, too.
Yeah, a lot of this is being kept it was kept artificially low. They were releasing tons of water prior to removing the dams. But these guys own the stored water in that lake up there, and reclamation steals it and gives it to the fish. There's a federal court case pending on the ownership of the water. And the Trump administration, last go-round, near the end of their term, finally looked at it and said, yeah, we are stealing your water. But if they settled it, they'd have to settle with every other farmer in the country that they've been stealing water, you know, claiming it's for ESA. And that's not what the Endangered Species Act was supposed to do.
That's another one of those things that started out small and respectable and became unrespectable. And
They're saving bushes and all sorts of things now. And now we just make things up. But the funny part about, like, that in that dam removal, here you had an endangered species that was up there, right? And, you know, the whole world had to revolve around the short-nosed sucker. And when they went to do the dam, when they really got serious about moving toward dam removal, they discovered 80% of the breeding pairs lived behind the reservoirs that were reservoirs because of the dams. And so they passed a bill in California that you could kill the short-nosed sucker during dam removal. So they took four dams out and wiped out the entire population. There you go.
You know, like Trump said, you know, there ought to be cost-benefit analysis to this stuff.
And there is not. There's no economic.
Of course not. Bureaucrats don't do that. They don't know about that. It's just, oh my gosh, there's a yellow-tailed swan we have to protect or something. I mean, it's just absolute.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. And then they want to endanger them in places where they've never been, like California. When they endangered wolves in California, we hadn't had wolves here for 100 years. You don't get to endanger a species that hasn't been there for 100 years. But they did it anyway. So it's like, I don't know, I get the cost on Farm Bill, but the real cost on Farm Bill, 80% of it is welfare programs and food stamps.
Yeah. Yeah, and like I say, food stamps started out with 15 million people, and now it's like 60. Thank you, Obama, Biden.
Well, we've turned it into a generational program. And there are always people who will need those things. You know, we'll never wipe those programs out, but boy.
Yeah, the first 15 million might have needed them.
Yeah, well, the checks and balances on those programs mean you're constantly either running into somebody or reading something from someone, like people that you actually know, who stood behind folks in the grocery store line who had multiple EBT cards. And, you know, the real killer for me is the one in Oregon.
Yeah, and then they're up there buying Cheetos and stuff like that.
Pretty much.
And if you tell them they should buy vegetables, it's racist.
Yeah, then you're in big trouble. Well, it's how bad it's gotten. I don't know why this one bugs me so much, but in Oregon, the EBT card is called the Oregon Trail card. And I'm like, what the hell? Those poor people that did, you know, that actually survived the Oregon Trail, and now their food welfare card is named after them. People who survived and struggled and
persevered,
you know. Yeah, and now they're just a blip on an EBT
card. It's kind of an insult, isn't it?
Isn't it? I just think that's so harsh. But without a good, you know, budget process, we'll constantly have these, you know, hysterical. I don't know.
Yeah.
Mayhem.
Well, you know, the thing is, we have a job shortage in this country. And then we have all these people that are on benefits.
Yeah.
Someone ought to try to square that circle and say, we're going to cut the benefits and you need to go work.
Yeah, and whenever
because
you try to
need
include
jobs.
That.
And if you don't like to cut lawns or work in a feedlot, that's too bad for you. That may be what you can do. That may be what your God-given skills permit you to do successfully. So go do it instead of collecting our money. But there's not any kind of will in the government, and Republicans are what we need on this too, but certainly Democrats, to go say, forget it. I mean, there's work out there to go do. Well, the fact that we even have people on welfare when we have such a job shortage is incredible to me. And I'm an employer. We're looking for people all the time.
Yeah, how's that going? I know Bill enjoys looking for new people. That's been
it's an impossibility to find people. The number one thing is try to find somebody who can pass a drug test. In fact, I had one of our other branches called me the other day and said, "Hey, do you have any more drug tests? Because we do our own." I said, yeah. He goes, man, I've gone through five this week. And he says, I'm out, and they're going to be 2 weeks away, and I need one. I said, come on over.
Yeah.
You know, it's pretty sad when you have applicants that can't pass a simple drug test. And
it's really bad.
Yeah.
And we have a lot of jobs that need to be done. And I'm sorry, but a lot of them are kind of manual jobs, mm-hmm. heavy lifting and hard work, but tough. Mm-hmm. Instead of paying them to sit home, I'd rather make them go get one of those jobs.
Yeah.
You know, go work in a meatpacking plant.
Mm-hmm.
Or go work construction with all my laborers and stuff who are out there working hard every day.
Well, yeah, it's no different anywhere else. You're only going to get a job at something that you're qualified to do. And if you're not qualified to be an administrative type person, I mean, then you have to look for something that you are qualified for. And there's a lot of those jobs out there, and a lot of them are jobs that have the ability to work your way up the ladder. But see, that's another thing nobody wants to do. They don't want to start at the bottom or in the middle. They want to start at the top.
You know? Most anybody can sweep or mm-hmm. use a sledgehammer.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't take a lot of skill.
No. And
you just got to get these guys to dry out long enough to be able to do it.
Yeah, well, people in our generation, we all did that. You know, we all started at the bottom. I started at the bottom. I started on a broom, and you start there and you work your way up, and that's how it needs to be, and that's how you're going to get experience, and that's how you're going to find out if you can work with the people in that industry, and it's also going to, you know, for me, it was, you know what, I don't want to live on the end of this broom for very long. What do I have to do?
Right.
And you start looking at, where's the opportunity, and get yourself some skills and make that next step up. You can't step all the way up, but you can make that next step.
And but once they're in the welfare system, no work ethic.
No, that's right. And that's, I think that's the biggest tragedy of that whole system, is once you get people in it, they don't want to get out of it. And I know people personally that have been on that system forever, and they brag about it. Hey, I don't have to work. I get this. I get all this free. I had a guy tell me one time, well, I can't start for that. I make more than that on aid. Well,
yeah,
there's something wrong. Yeah, there's
totally
something wrong. Yeah, there's something wrong there.
Well, I'm kinda...
the Democrats routinely resist putting work requirements into the welfare program.
I was just going to say, because during your term you were in from 2017 to 2021, wasn't that when we had the big push to add work requirements?
Totally.
Yeah, that's what I thought. We did that several times in Congress, tried to include that, and it was stripped out each time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that's a big drag on our economy and our finances and everything.
Well, you guys
without any productive return.
You guys tried to legalize marijuana in your state, right, in Florida? Did you guys made a run at that? And it failed.
I think it failed. Yeah, I'm not for the marijuana thing.
Yeah, well, don't get me started. Yeah, so that failed. Well, so just like... you know, like anything else, right? You look to who got there before you. Well, California did this quite a while back, and it created a massive unemployed population, a drug-addicted population, a living-on-the-street homeless population. Then we decriminalized crime and did all that, but it's very...
How'd that work?
It worked great for if you're a criminal. Or even people who were thinking about being criminals. Like, you didn't have to be a career criminal.
Well, how about those videos that you can steal $900 and somebody will prosecute you?
That's
some guy goes in there with a calculator, when he gets to $850, he leaves.
It was $950, and I actually got to a store right after that happened one time. And they had three people run in, one with a calculator, two with baskets. They ran through the store shouting out prices. As soon as it hit $950, they snatched it all and ran. But in here just this last month, making crime again, we had Prop 36, and that passed. So the other night we were in CVS Pharmacy, and here came Reading Police Department. And he's like, ma'am, I want to see... Well, Bill, you were closer.
Oh, this gal was in one of those roller carts where you can ride around with the basket, and she had a big bag wrapped between her legs. And the PD guy comes up and says, what do you got in the bag? Nothing. Let me open it up. Let me look. What's that? Take it out and put it in the basket. So she takes out some hair care or something and puts it in the basket. What else you got? I don't have all day. So she pulls out another thing. Oh, come on. Let's see it all. Dump it out. Ah, never mind. I'm out of time. Get out. We're going to jail. And off they went. And it's like, wow, that's refreshing. I mean,
yeah, it is refreshing.
Finally, they're going to start. And, you know, that's what it's going to take.
What is it that the liberals don't understand, that if you remove the police, the bad guys are going to have a free day?
Well, sure. It's not going to change their way. I mean, they're going to. You're just opening up the doors.
I mean, if they're willing to commit crimes with police, what are they going to do when there's no police?
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's the part that's always been interesting to me. It's like, well, we're locking up petty criminals, which is making them bigger criminals. But it's like, no, we're actually letting them commit small crimes so they can get better at it. That's what's making better criminals.
The tree grows from the roots.
Yeah,
it's really weird. Just the whole. So it
I've
had
heard
to,
all those arguments.
It had to get bad enough so that people were being affected everywhere. And so as soon as, you know, car theft here. Car theft is no longer, you know, Grand Theft Auto. Remember that video game years ago?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's only a video game. It's no longer Grand Theft. Stealing a car was a misdemeanor.
Because that's just some rich guy's property. Who cares about him?
Yeah, kind of. And you look at that
socialist there.
And I look at the amount of money to kind of go back to where we started. You look at the amount of money that is going, you know, slipping through our fingers on all these different things. And then you look at what we're spending on, you know, wars overseas, and, you know, everybody gets hysterical about overseas aid or foreign aid. But foreign aid just isn't that big.
It's nothing.
No. I mean, I actually don't have a figure. I should have looked it up. But foreign aid, I think people would be shocked at how small it is.
It's like 1% of the State Department's budget.
Yeah, it's tiny. Same, too, with, you know, when everyone got hysterical about, you know, Congress was going to get a 40% raise. It's like, now it was 1.7%, and actually the entire expenses of Congress are less than 0.7% of the federal budget.
The bigger question with Congress is,
crazy.
Are they worth it? Can you get people that can actually do a good job? In a structure with the campaign financing problems, with the insulated districts that protect incumbents,
it's difficult. Look at the media that tells everybody that some of these, you know, you get right down to it. I'm kind of I play hardball on this one. I kind of look at that and I'm like, you know, we blame people in elected bodies, the California legislature here, you know, Congress, whatever, like they're electing each other. It's like these people are being sent there by their constituents.
Yeah.
And they're being sent there because the people that sometimes scream the loudest don't vote. You know, that's the thing.
We got a big thing with that here. But
I don't know about the state level, but in these highly partisan districts, there is no election. It's all the primary.
Yeah, a lot of it is
and
primary.
It drives everybody to the extreme left or the extreme right.
Yep.
And now that's what we're reaping now.
Well, in California, they got rid of the, we just have top two. So in this state, in a lot of districts, a Republican can't get on the ticket. You're always going to have two Democrats on the ticket.
Wow.
So your ability to mix it up is like zilch. And here, I'll give you one. Here's a conundrum for you. So Nancy Pelosi was running again, and people were kind of apoplectic about it. You know, like, oh, my God, she's running again. It's like, no, you're excited about it. You're excited about it. Trust me. You want her to run. I want her to run forever because the guy who wants her seat is a guy named Scott Wiener. Yes, there are two Wieners in politics, not the other Wiener. New Wiener out here, and that guy does all the transgender bills and a ton of bad legislation in the California legislature.
Yeah, at least Nancy wouldn't be too aggressive on that kind of thing.
Nope, and he'll win in that district. He will absolutely win, and he's not that old. We'll get stuck with him forever. So I'm like, well, Nancy was running again. I thought, good, which made me feel kind of weird.
Yeah.
Yeah.
was like, no.
She's a little more liberal than any of us are, but she's a nice person.
Yeah, it was like, no, don't be upset about that, actually. She's saving us from a much greater problem. Yeah, it's not terrific. Well, you had said you could only hang out with us for a half hour, so we don't want to overstay our welcome here. But kind of on the foreign policy end, where do you think they'll go first, and do you think Rubio's a good guy for it?
I think Rubio's a good guy because he's confirmable and non-controversial, unlike an awful lot of Trump's proposed people.
Yeah.
And I know Marco really well. He's very solidly grounded in conservative foreign policy, traditional American foreign policy, and that will be a good reset to the middle after this crazy Biden stuff.
Yeah.
So the Russians and the Chinese and the Iranians are going to have to think twice about what they do. You know, our foreign policy works best when we project unified strength in our country. And I think we're seeing some positive results of that now with the Hezbollah agreement. Hezbollah wouldn't have done that if Trump hadn't won. Now you have the Iranian failure in Syria that we can leverage. Iran has actually been very quiet about Trump. It's kind of like the Ronald Reagan thing when he won and they released the hostages. They have no idea what he might do to them. And that's good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Fear is a good thing in that sense.
Yeah, you want your adversaries to fear you.
Yeah.
Yeah. And what do you what's your thoughts on Elon and his cost cutting program? Do you think that'll be effective?
Man. I don't know if he can do it or not. Super excited. I mean, I've got a whole list of ideas I'd love to send him, and I may. I mean, how about taking the agriculture department and relocating it to, like, North Dakota?
Yeah.
The entire department. And maybe the State Department go to Mississippi,
mm-hmm.
you know, and just dismantle all this stuff.
Yeah.
And, you know, like I said, we were talking about the agriculture department earlier, but you think about when it was set up, when we had 80% of the country were farmers, now it's just supporting all the big farmers, like you have in California.
Mm-hmm.
Why do we need all those bureaucrats to take care of about 15 companies?
Right. Mm-hmm.
There's so many programs that could be cut back, and that Biden expanded some that have been in the paper, like the EPA and the SEC and some of that. But there's all kinds of little programs down in the bowels of the government you would never know about. They got set up, and nobody knows why they're still there, and just get rid of them all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What's your thoughts on Department of Education?
Well, I don't think you're going to be able to get rid of it. It's a laudable idea, but I think it certainly needs to become the Department of Education for all education, not just the teachers union.
Right. Yeah, because they've completely taken it over.
Ron DeSantis, when Ron DeSantis won, a bunch of black mothers wrote into the newspapers that they voted for Ron DeSantis because they wanted their kids to get to go to charter schools.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
And
school
I think
choice.
That's a really positive thing. And now Glenn Youngkin, just this week, proposed a $5,000 tax credit to people whose income was less than two times the whatever the national income calculus is. It's like 80 grand. $5,000 tax credit to send their kid to a charter school. That's good stuff.
Yeah.
Because we've got to kneecap the teachers union, and no Democrat's going to do it. They live off of minorities in the teachers union. We live off of real people with jobs.
Yeah. Well, and honestly, you know from being in office, when you're I don't know what type of district, you know, what your predominant industry and stuff in your district was when you were representing, but it's really tough in a district like this because all of our stuff tracks to NOAA, NIMS, Bureau of Reclamation, and all that, and Forest Service. You know, the fires that we have here all the time, they're preventable, but we're busy stripping out our water storage, so you can't fight the fire.
The conservationists don't want to allow fire breaks.
Yeah, we're not cutting the trees. So
you need fire breaks.
Well, we need to thin. Like, we just have too much volume.
But isn't that the traditional way to contain fires, is have big fire breaks where the fire will go to the edge where there's no trees and you stop it?
Kind of, but we have we have millions and millions of acres. I mean, if you do a Google Earth over the West Coast and do a Google Earth over the East Coast and then factor humidity it's a really different preventative model. Just because we're at 5% humidity most summers.
And so, that's really dry.
Yeah, so that's why that's why the East Coast isn't burning up. Their trees are shorter. They just don't. They're too filled with moisture. So here,
5%. That's less than Arizona.
I know, it's really dry. So when you see that we just burned down a million acres in the Dixie Fire, and there goes what was 110? It was a third of the CR was disaster. And a huge percentage of it came to all these places that had burned down, crop loss, flooded, blah, blah, blah. I mean, but again, like, they're taking out, there was no reason to take out these dams here. It's not going to, they killed all the fish. All the fish in the entire river, they killed them. But on the internet, if
fish
you go,
can't handle 5 knots, 8 knots of water running over there.
Well, there isn't any water in the summer. That's what the reservoirs did. They kept the level up. But the funny part is, you'll see that it's a huge success because here are the fish. Well, the fish are all really nice looking, and that's not what they look like when they've returned. They're all black and scarred up. So those fish were trucked there and dumped in and are swimming around, and everyone goes, look, it's a success, fish are back. But it only works if you don't know anything about fish, which is like a lot of people. So everyone says, oh, good, wash your hands of it. Let's go do it somewhere else.
Real quick, what's your thoughts on Department of Energy?
I think that we need an all-out push for the small nuclear plants that don't use non-enriched uranium.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's what Dr. Pry was always pushing.
We should also pass a carbon tax, which I introduced, and get rid of coal, because we don't need coal. Natural gas is 7 to 10 times cleaner, and nuclear, of course, is infinitely cleaner, and we need to focus on those things.
Well, I think we've got almost an unlimited supply of natural gas, too.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we've got California telling everyone you can't buy anything but an electric car after 2035, except we don't have the grid.
Well,
we don't have the grid to power it.
Huge fallacy, too, because how does electric cars run?
Yeah, exactly.
They run on something that requires either coal or natural gas to produce the electricity.
Yeah. Well, I can't tell you how many of these remote charging stations they have for electric vehicles. If you look around, you'll find a diesel generator that's powering them.
That's really bad.
Yeah.
Not to mention the strip mines to find the lithium and the cobalt and all the other rare earth minerals that it takes to make them.
I
think a nice tidy gas well on 1/5 of an acre producing a whole lot of natural gas and then remediating the land and moving on is a lot better bet.
We don't have the power grid for it, so this whole thing they don't look at that. That isn't the calculation, you know.
No.
Let's look. Can we do this? Should we propose it? It's like, no, we have to. And then they get all, like, in 2 weeks we're going to do a show with a guy who worked for Al Gore. He was one of his staffers when Al Gore was in the Senate. And he has some background on how Gore came up with a bunch of this stuff. And it was all plagiarized and made up. And so, I don't know, kind of hoping maybe in my lifetime.
That should be a good interview. Ask him when he invented the internet.
Yeah. Oh, I forgot about that part. Yeah, you know what? I'm going to have to send him that for a question. Really interesting. And I thought, there's so many holes in the climate hoax. I'm kind of hoping in my lifetime I watch that go away. Like, you know, when we were kids, we were going to have a new ice age. We were all going to freeze to death. And now,
well, you know, China burns more coal than the rest of the world put together.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So we need to focus in the United States on things that we can do, that the United States can do to protect U.S. waters and U.S. air. Because we can't deal with the world.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I mean, when you get back to this electric vehicle mandate, 2035, that's only 10 years away. And there's just no way. I mean, if they jumped on it right now and just went hog wild building infrastructure, it can't be put together by 2035.
No.
It can't happen. California is a big state with lots and lots of vehicles. And there's no real movement right now on improving our infrastructure to allow all this electric mandate.
But you look at these foreign countries, and they're like, oh, this is awesome. We're going to run the world because these guys are going to just be sitting there in the dark.
In a cave.
Hooray! Oh, my gosh. Well, we better let you go. We
you bet. Well, thank you for having me on.
Yeah, absolutely. It was good chatting with you, and have a Merry Christmas. And we look forward to visiting with you in the new year to see what actually turns out.
Absolutely.
Uh-huh. Look forward to it. Merry Christmas to you.
All right.
Merry
Christmas. Have a great time with your family. Enjoy sunny Florida.
Yeah.
All right. We've been chatting with Ambassador Francis Rooney. He was a member of Congress and also the ambassador to the Vatican. And we're going to come back and, fiddle around until 1 o'clock. And then we have Phil Kirpin on with us. Actually, Phil talks like a blue streak, so, you know, if you're drinking coffee, switch to decaf now. Save yourself. But he'll go on about domestic policy, so we'll switch over to that. And you're listening to We the People. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
Said the shepherd boy to the mighty king, do you know what I know? In your palace warm, mighty king, do you know what I know? A child, shivers in the cold. Let us bring him silver and gold. Let us bring him silver and gold.
There'll be snow at Christmas. They said there'll be peace on earth, but instead it just kept on raining. A veil of tears for the virgin birth. I remember one Christmas morning, a winter's light and a distant choir, the peal of a bell and that Christmas tree smell, eyes full of tinsel and fire. They sold me a dream of Christmas. They sold me a silent night. They told me a fairy story, till I believed in the Israelite. And I believed in Father Christmas. I looked to the sky with excited eyes. Then I woke with a yawn in the first light of dawn, and I saw him in through his disguise.
How do you go wrong with Emerson, Lake, and Palmer at Christmas?
Yeah, you don't hear that one very often, do you?
I know. I think it's my favorite.
Yeah.
I like it because it has really, really good music. And it isn't just the regular Christmas music. I just, we had a little time, and I thought, hey, we should play some stuff that, I don't know, you never get to hear. So that was Greg Lake, used to be with Emerson, Lake, and Palmer. What a loss. Lose a guy like that. He had such a terrific voice. The video on that, if you are somebody on YouTube or whatever, the song's called I Believe in Father Christmas. It's been around a long time, and the video on it is really quite good if you want to go find that. And let's see, I got some other ones here. I've got, we're kind of doing this on the Skype with the engineering room, and I was like, I found a few last night that weren't just 50 seconds long, you know. But Casting Crowns has a really good one. It's called I Heard the Bells on Christmas. So I figure when Christina can find that on my list, maybe we can play that for you. While we're... Hmm. Oh, she said it's good. Okay. So this is Casting Crowns, I Heard the Bells on Christmas Day.
Thank you. her. Peace on earth. Peace on earth. Goodwill to men. Mary, did you know that your baby boy would one day walk on water?
Mary, did you know that your baby boy would save our sons and daughters? Did you know that your baby boy has come to make you new? This child that you delivered will soon deliver you.
There you go.
Oh, nice.
Real Christmas music. Not crummy, cheesy Christmas music. I don't know, I get kind of tired of the crummy, cheesy Christmas music. So, we are looking forward to having our guest on this next hour. I can't see. Let me give you some. He is a free market policy analyst and advocate in Washington, D.C. He was the principal policy and legislative strategist at Americans for Prosperity for over 5 years, actually. He previously worked at the Free Enterprise Fund, the Club for Growth, and the Cato Institute. Phil Kirpin is nationally syndicated as a columnist. He's chairman of the Internet Freedom Coalition and author of the 2011 book Democracy Denied. Well, we've had Phil on a few times before. I've got his information on the site for today. Today is December 22nd, 2024. And if history is any sort of a teacher, every single time he comes on, it's kind of like pulling a ripcord and we just get blasted. He's awesome. He's
blasted in a good way.
Blasted in a good way, yeah. Yes. He just has a lot of information. So I know there was a lot of discussion with, this stupid congressional resolution last week and stuff. And just a little FYI, little things that you're not told. Interestingly enough, the 1,500-page bill that they were kind of apoplectic about was actually less money than the 157-page version.
That they passed?
No, didn't pass that either.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, kind of interesting, but it seems like it was kind of a trick that I feel like they played on the public, where they told everybody that, you know, the smaller bill would be better. Smaller bill actually cost more money, which was pretty ridiculous. And what else was in there? Oh, yeah, the congressional salary thing. You realize Congress hasn't had a raise since 2009. So that's been frozen since 2009. If they added up all of the COLA increases over time, it would have been 40-something percent. But they were never voting on a 40% increase in pay. It was going to be net-net about a 1.7% increase, which is about $3,000 a year. And that got stripped out. Another little known fact, that has to be done prior to the new term. So it's not like they could put it off and do it in the middle of their term. They can't vote themselves while in office an increase in pay. But I would kind of ask how many people are still working for the same wage they got in 2009? Yeah, zero people. So, kind of interesting. And so, let's see. We can go out with the piano guys. O Come, O Come, Emmanuel. We won't be able to play the whole thing, but we'll play some of it, and it's really pretty. We'll be right back. You're listening to We the People.